Merkel Media.
Lashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to February 9th, 2021, locked and loaded in the USA. Hey, if you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible assets like gold and silver, or maybe converting your IRA and 401k, talk to our sponsor, Tony Arterburn. Go to www.macroaggressions.gold. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swingles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How the hell are you? Oh, I certainly do appreciate you checking us out. We know you have a million options out there. Thank you for your support. Speaking of support, we can't do this without the amazing support of our sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been one of them. They're a small business owned by Tim James, who's been on the show a couple of times. Got to take care of your health. If you have poor health, nothing else matters. It's the only thing you'll focus on. So be proactive. Get ahead of the curve. Start thinking about this stuff. Chemical Free Body, their products are certified organic. They're dairy free. They're soy free, GMO free, gluten free. They're plant based. They're amazing. They're great. I bought a bunch of products over Christmas and gave them out to my family. If you use the promo code MACRO, they'll save you some money. They have free shipping on any orders $99 or above in the continental United States. And I really suggest you give them a chance. Check them out. Just take a look. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. If you buy something, use the promo code MACRO and support, well, support both of us. And Honey Colony is another one of our sponsors. We love Honey Colony because we love the bees. And if it's not for the bees, there's not going to be much of us left. So, take a look, support another small business, another member of the alternative media community, Miriam Hanane. She owns this company called Honey Colony. She's the director of Vanishing of the Bees. It makes sense she would start this. If you're looking for some really cool ideas, gifts for friends and family, they have all kinds of things. They have body care and facial care. They have home and garden. They have immunity system boost. They have anti-aging products, bee-related goods, of course. And listen, if you're going to buy something anywhere, it's great to support local businesses. It's great to support the people that have a similar philosophy on life, that don't want to be bothered by the government. I think we would all put ourselves in that category. So if you check out honeycolony.com and buy something, use the promo code MACRO there. Save yourself some money as well. Well, if there's one thing we know about America, Americans love their guns. They certainly do. We have a fairly, I don't know, I'd call it an obsession with guns. And maybe it has to do with the way that the country started. You know, maybe this pioneer spirit and this enterprise where you're out roaming the vast prairies and mountains, and you've got your guns with you in case you encounter some dangerous animal. That's the story, at least, right? I mean, we all know what they're using the guns for. They're shooting Indians and taking their land, putting them in, you know, driving the buffalo off of cliffs and things like that. I mean, we have a bit of a psychotic founding of this country for sure. But I mean, that's not on us. None of us were around for that. But we've inherited this. It's been passed down, this obsession with guns, which for those outside of the United States is quite foreign for many of them. They look at us and go, why are you so into guns? Well, we're into guns because, you know, I think culturally we know, we inherently know that as long as we have guns, we have a chance against tyranny. Now, to be clear, bad idea to go up against your government's military with your guns. You know, that's a fight you'll lose, and I'm not in any way advocating that. But I think it is important. I think it's important that the United States government know that the population is armed, not necessarily because they're going to do anything. You know, it's not like they're going to, you know, storm the Capitol or anything. Just kidding. But, you know, it's not like they're going to, you know, really put together a revolution, but it's just another layer of deterrent to keep this out of control government system that we have from steamrolling the people. They want to. Believe me, they want to. And we know what happens through history when you disarm a population. It's what happens first before they line you all up against the wall and start shooting. You know, and Mao Zedong talked about this. He said that you take away the weapons before the slaughter. That's dictatorship 101, right? So we see these pushes for gun control. Saw it in the Soviet Union, or, you know, Russia, I should say, back in the, you know, 1930s and 40s. We saw it in Germany in the 30s and 40s. We saw it in Cambodia with Mao. I mean, this is what happens. You disarm the public for a couple of reasons. One, you're doing something that you might rightly be shot by them for doing. So you definitely want to disarm the population. I mean, if you're a criminal government, you disarm the population, not for their own benefit. That wouldn't protect them at all. You disarm them because you know that it's only a matter of time before they pick up on your criminality and they come looking for you. That's the reason why we see this push for gun confiscation, or the banning of the incremental banning of products associated with rifles and things like that, bump stocks and extended magazines and, you know, things like that. It's the incremental removal of these little pieces, one by one by one by one. Next thing you know, you're banning hunting rifles, then you're banning. Or you're banning, assault weapons, then you're banning semi-automatic rifles, then you're banning hunting rifles, then you're banning handguns, then you're banning everything. You know, this is the direction it's going. And so, you know, the Second Amendment to the Constitution is the right to bear arms in the United States. The government does not like the idea that hundreds of millions of Americans have guns. So, you know, they're going to do whatever it takes to convince the public that they need to confiscate all the guns for our own protection. That's the twist in all of this, is that the sales pitch is, we need to take the guns away from you to protect you. And it's like, how does that make sense? Unless you think I'm just waving guns randomly at the dinner table, or playing Russian roulette after dessert. You're going to take the guns away from us because we're what, children? No, 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 no. See, if you are old enough and legally you buy your guns, that they're your guns. The government doesn't have the right to come in and take the guns from you. Now, they may want to, but they don't have the right to. Do you know why they don't have the right to? because of the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Period. End of story. Now, I know, and I used to even think about this, I know that there is one line of thought that says, yeah, well, you know, they wrote that back when you needed a rifle because a bear might come into your house or something, or you may get attacked by wild animals. And, you know, we needed this for protection, but we don't need that. Now, do you really need an AR-15 to, you know, to protect yourself if a bear is coming? Well, look, the answer is probably not, but that's beside the point. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. If the gun is legal, it's legal. You know, what part of shall not be infringed are they having a hard time understanding? Now, look, if you'll get yourself in a whole lot of trouble if you have a machine gun, you know, on you somewhere in the trunk of your car, maybe it's not registered, or maybe, I mean, you know, listen, this is an area where you can get yourself into a lot of trouble with the authorities, because the gun control legislation is a bit murky. You know, some states you have to do this, some states it's fine. Some states if you're a convicted felon, you can't have a gun. You know, obviously. But there's variations on the law. It changes from state to state, changes based on what permits you have, and open carry and concealed carry, and all these different classifications that you can get. It's not one size fits all. So, you know, look, as long as the government knows that the people are armed, they will be less likely to try to take advantage of them. This is just a simple assessment of the situation. It's not saying that they're not going to take advantage. It just says that they're going to be a little bit less likely to take advantage. And, you know, it's one of the things that the Japanese talked about in World War II. They had said that an invasion of the United States would be difficult because everyone there had guns. You know, and so they were, you know, like the citizens all had guns. So they were very concerned about that. Now, they had just come off of rolling through China, Manchuria, Manchukuo, all those places, and they had wiped out the Chinese who did not have guns. You know, I mean, or they didn't have enough guns. So this is a very, we understand the math behind this. If you do not have guns, you present yourself as a big target for people that do have guns to come and take your stuff, whether you be an individual or a country, right? This is not rocket science. This is just real obvious. American civilians own an estimated 265 million to 330 million guns, or roughly 40% of the guns in the world, according to the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies in Geneva. That's a lot of guns. And you know, there's a thought out there around the world that America's gun crazy and that they're a bunch of gun nuts, and that might be true. But you know what? That's okay. Been called worse things, right? You know better. When you look at history, you hope you don't need a gun. You hope you don't need to use one. But it's a little bit like the insurance industry, right? You hope you don't need it, but you have it just in case. And there's nothing wrong with having auto insurance, health insurance, home insurance. Why wouldn't you have personal safety insurance? Which is what having a gun is. Now, to be crystal clear here, I'm not advocating that every moron out there go out and get themselves some guns, okay? But what I've found is that the people that are really into guns are some of the most responsible with their guns, and they take that very seriously. So, you know, the thought that, oh, well, if everyone gets guns, then it'll just be mass chaos and everyone will be shooting at each other. That's not true. Some people are dumb, and some people will take their guns and wave them around. And listen, man, Plaxico Burress shot himself in the leg with his own gun in a nightclub, all right? And then did 2 years for it. So there are dumb people out there that should not have guns, to be clear. That I'm not advocating this for everyone, but it is a component of American life that has to be examined. I think it's fascinating for people outside of the USA to look at that gun culture, and they shake their heads and they go, what is that all about? Well, what it's all about is that we're a bit paranoid. We're a bit paranoid about our government. You know, we're geographically, we're not really set up to be invaded. You know, we have oceans on the West Coast and the East Coast. We have Mexico to the South and Canada to the North and everything. So we're fairly insulated from like an external attack. But I think in the back of people's minds, they know that the government of the United States is run by criminals. And how do you deal with criminals? You make sure that you don't get rolled up on by them, right? So you keep yourself, you keep your eyes open and you watch your six, so to speak. And if that means having guns, then that means having guns. If that means not, you know, being strategic about who you interact with and, or, you know, removing yourself and not putting yourself in a situation where you interact with the government a lot, well, then maybe that's the best case too. In fact, that is the best case. But having guns in the United States is fairly common. In fact, 31% of American adults own a gun. And, you know, but the thing is that there, what it is, like anything, there's a small percentage of people that own a shit ton of guns. And then there's everyone else that owns maybe one or two. So like, as an example, just 3% of American adults own a collective 133 million firearms. So this is an average of 17 guns for each one of these people. So, you know what I mean? And I'm not talking about Stephen Paddock, okay, up in a hotel room in Mandalay Bay. I'm talking about, it's just people that are into guns, you know? They tend to be kind of like collectibles, you know? And if you've got the money and the capacity to buy that sort, you know, to have that hobby, you know, different guns do different things, different sizes, different bullet types, and all, you know, you can get really into it. And like anything, it could be a hobby. It could be a business. It could be, you know, you could be a paranoid schizophrenic and have, you know, want to have a bunch of guns because you think people are out to get you. But I think most people are really very reasonable and measured with their guns. They keep them for protection. And yes, listen, if you made guns illegal in the United States, I mean, this is an argument everyone's had. We've all had this conversation. You know that criminals aren't going to give a shit. They're still going to get guns. So then what you're going to have is criminals armed and everybody else disarmed. All the good people, they're like, I'm not a rule breaker. I'm not a law breaker. You say not to have a gun, I won't have a gun. Okay. Well, guess what? Someone shows up, a criminal who's like, well, guess what? I'm a rule breaker. I don't give a shit that there's a law saying I can't have a gun. There's a law saying I can't do a bunch of stuff that I do on a daily basis. You think I care about that? Give me your money. You know, so on a personal note, I'm not a fan of guns. And I've mentioned this before. When I was 8 years old in a car with my mother at broad daylight, 3 o'clock in the afternoon in a parking lot of a mall, we had two guys come up alongside of us and put a gun to my mom's head and say, move over or I'll blow your brains out. All right. I saw this with my own eyes. I had another guy right on my side trying to get in my passenger door. You know, it didn't happen. My mom slammed the car door and honked the horn, and luckily these guys didn't pull the trigger. But it could have very easily happened. And so I have a very different relationship with guns than most people. I have a personal connection to how that can go. Now, you can see that story two different ways. You could see it as, oh my God, guns are bad, or you can see it as, if your mom had a gun, then maybe she would have, you know, I get it. That's not, in that current situation, there was no opportunity for my mom to, if she'd had a gun, to pull a gun out. She was getting into a car, into the driver's seat of the car, and this guy was standing there trying to hold the door open with a gun right to her head. You can't make a move in that. I mean, you have to know the situation. So being armed in that situation wouldn't have helped us. So I have a very personal connection to the guns. Now, it could have gotten a lot worse. And look, I know people who have had it get a lot worse. I know people that have had massive tragedies in their lives connected to guns. So it's a serious thing. It's a serious topic. But, you know, since 2006, which we're talking about in the last 15 years, Americans have purchased 122 million new guns just in the last 15 years. Why do you think that is? You think they're doing that because they feel good about the current situation? No. That's what you do when you feel threatened or you feel that the wheels could come off and you want to make sure that you're protected. Now, listen, there's a massive push towards gun control by those in political power worldwide, not just America, but many other countries. The American military, the local police, and the authority-hating criminals will probably not hand over their guns. They're not the type to hand over their guns. You know, so look, when you talk about disarming the population, I think a lot of people might believe that this is somehow a one-off situation or that, you know, well, this happens there, but it'll never happen here. Look, wherever you are, it's always somewhere else where it happens. And look, you might be right. And hopefully you are. Hopefully it never happens to you. But in the last century, the number one killer of people around the world, estimated to be about 144 million people murdered, has come at the hands of their own government. Okay? You wonder why I have problems with the government? That statistic right there should tell you everything you need to know about why I am inherently suspicious about the government. Not everybody in the government, not everybody that works in the government is a piece of shit, okay, to be clear. There's good people in there, maybe trapped in a bad system, but the governmental system incentivizes insanity. It normalizes mass murder. The Soviet Gulag state murdered 61,911,000 of their own citizens. Let's round up and just say an even 62 million. 62 million? That's like, I mean, there are countries. You could group like a dozen countries together and not even get 62 million. Mao's communist China murdered 35,236,000 of their own people. Nazi Third Reich, 21 million. The depraved nationalist regime of China. Gotta love the name for that, right? 10,214,000 of their own people murdered. What about the calm, docile, reserved Japanese? Always so nice, always so warm. Well, Japan's savage military murdered 5,964,000 of their own people. Khmer Rouge, 2 million. Turkey's genocidal purges, 1,883,000 people. The Vietnamese war state, 1,670,000 people murdered. This is murdered by their own government. Do you understand me? I'm not talking about murdered by some external force. I'm not talking about getting invaded and dying during war. I'm talking about rounded up and murdered by your own government. 62 million people in the Soviet Gulag state? Man, that is almost impossible to wrap your head around. It happens all over the place. I mean, it happens in countries that you look, it happens in countries that you think it might happen in, like North Korea, which is 1.6 million people of their own people have been murdered. It happens there, right? You expect that. Do you expect it in Poland? During Poland's ethnic cleansing, 1,585,000 people were murdered. Pakistani cutthroat state, 1,500,003 people were murdered. Or 503,000, I should say. Tito, slaughterhouse. These names, man, that they gave these regimes are, man, it's horrible. 1,072,000 people murdered. even in Mexico, what they call barbarous Mexico, 1,417,000. Look, after this is why I'm talking about gun control. After China established gun control in 1935, 10,076,000 political dissidents were murdered from 1948 to 1952, plus another 35 million people over the next 35 years. Okay. I'm going to reread that. China established gun control in 1935. Then during a four-year period, they murdered 10 million of their own people, just in 4 years. And then over the next 35 years after that, on average, they murdered 1 million people a year for the next 35 years. To say this is alarming is an understatement. This is the Nazi Germany implemented their version of gun confiscation in 1938, which was a year before the war broke out. 13 million people that were not loyal to Hitler's Third Reich were executed in just 6 years. So these things, when they happen fast. You know, Cambodia, you ever see that movie, The Killing Fields? Really great movie, extremely sad, very traumatizing. In just 5 years, the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia killed 2 million people. Let me put it in a different context. In 5 years, the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia killed 30% of the population. Do you know why they killed them? You know who they went after first? The educated. And you know why? Because they considered them to be a threat to their regime. So if you're listening to shows like this, you're obviously intelligent. You know, you're like me. You're seeking answers. You're trying to figure out the insanity of this all. What these regimes recognize is that people like us, they view us as a threat to them. Not because we're an actual threat, like not because we're going to rise up against them, but because we're smart enough to figure out what they're doing. And so we have got to go. So when we talk about gun control in the United States, it's a form of self-preservation for us because we know who will be targeted. And if you think that won't happen or can't happen because we're America, man, that shit doesn't happen here. Well, look at what's been happening since the turnover from Trump to Biden. Lists. Let's make a list of all the people that were working with Trump. Let's make a list of it. You know who else made lists? The Khmer Rouge and Stalin and Hitler and Pulp. This is what they do. So we're sliding into that rather quickly. And frankly, we should be I got a great sense of humor, but that shit's not funny. When you start talking about the need to put people on list because of their association with because they liked a different political puppet than your political puppet. Oh, we got to put them on a list. They were working with Trump. How dare they work with Trump? Well, you're working with Biden. The same can be said about you. You know, what do you think I mean, this goes both ways, of course. So you have to kind of think about like, well, how does our government view us? You know, do we have a good relationship with our government? And no, we do not. We are in an abusive relationship with our government. Our government, you know, is like that asshole boyfriend who's like beat you up. And then you're like, you know, you go to your friends and you're like, why do you have a black eye? And you're like, he hits me because he loves me, you know? And they're like, what? You're trying to make sense of this relationship you have. Now, you know, what helps people prepare for what's coming in the near future depends on one's ability to recognize the changes that are happening, as well as any unusual disturbances that are out of the ordinary and may be used to alert a person about what the future may hold. Those that are observant will be able to see the moves being made by those in positions of power, and they can respond accordingly. So as an example of this, I think it's interesting for people to know that the Department of Homeland Security has issued an open purchase order for 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition or at least they opened that purchase order in 2013. And some of the purchase order was for hollow point rounds, which is forbidden by international law for use in war. When DHS is buying 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition, and you realize that there are only 350 million people in the United States, you go, wow, that works out to what, 5 bullets for each of us? Great. Can't wait. But to put the bullet purchase in perspective, like in comparison, the military goes through about 6 million bullets per month in Iraq. And so what DHS bought is enough rounds to sustain a war for 25 years. But it's not the first major purchase of bullets by DHS. No, no. They already bought 1.5 billion rounds in as well as 360,000 rounds of hollow point bullets. And DHS has requested another 450 million rounds in addition to the 1.6 billion. So they bought 1.5 billion, another 1.6 billion. So we're at 3.1 billion, and then just ordered another 450 million rounds. So we're at 3.55 billion rounds of ammunition for the Department of Homeland Security. I have a question. Who's the enemy? Who are they buying these bullets for? Well, I mean, I would say they were buying them, you know, if this was the military, I would say, well, they're buying them to use in wars, to go use in the Middle East to kill brown people that had nothing to do with us, which is what we normally do, or yellow people in Southeast Asia that had nothing to do with us. You know, that stuff. That's normally what we do. But when you've got 3.5 billion bullets sitting in the Department of Homeland Security's, you know, warehouses somewhere, you have to ask yourself why. And I think a subset of that question would be, why did DHS also just take delivery of 2,717 mine-resistant protected vehicles, MRAPs? Why are you buying 2,700 MRAPs? This is, you know, alarming. But even then, I guess maybe a case could be made that Department of Homeland Security needs bullets. We'll buy them now. It'll be cheaper, and we'll buy them in bulk, so they'll be really cheap, and then we'll just keep them forever because they don't go bad. I don't know. Maybe they do go bad. I don't know enough about bullets, but we'll buy them in bulk, and then we never have to buy them again. Okay. I can't even, that's a scenario I'm just throwing out there. I don't believe it at all, but let's just go with that. Then please explain this to me. Between 2006 and 2014, the Department of Veterans Affairs spent $11.7 million on bullets. The Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, the agency that is in charge of collecting taxes, they spent $10.7 million on bullets. The Animal and Plant Inspection Services, you know, those douchebags that set up those checkpoints in between like California and Vegas. If you've ever done that, I'm sure they've got them all over the place, to say, do you have any plants or animals, you know, in your, are you transporting any fruit or vegetables over state lines? You know, the guys that you tell the fuck off and then drive through. They spent $4.8 million on bullets. Maybe don't tell them to fuck off next time. Apparently they're armed, like really armed. Bureau of the Public Debt. And to be 100% honest, I had never heard of the Bureau of the Public Debt before, but they spent $2.8 million on bullets. So did NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They spent $1 million on bullets, plus bought 46,000 rounds of hollow point bullets. What are they shooting at? Whales? I mean, maybe it's NOAA, but, you know, maybe. Food and Drug Administration. You know, those people that make sure that your food is totally filled with poisons and that roll over for Monsanto and Syngenta and those people? FDA? They spent $815,000 on bullets. Social Security Administration, the people that give checks to old people, they spent $417,000 on bullets and then bought an additional 174,000 rounds of hollow points. This is a problem. This is insanity. So we understand that America is armed, not just the government, but also the people. We love our guns. And, you know, I think it has to do with our history. And what our history says is that in 1791, the Bill of Rights, including the Second Amendment, gains final ratification. The Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of a people, of the people, to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Okay, that was 1791. That's when that went in. In 1865, in a reaction to emancipation, several southern states adopt black codes, which, among other things, forbid black people from possessing firearms. Just a couple years later, in 1871, the National Rifle Association is organized around its primary goal of improving American civilians' marksmanship in preparation for war. Got to get you ready. Use guns. 1934, National Firearms Act of 1934, regulating the manufacture, sale, and possession of fully automatic firearms, like submachine guns, is approved by Congress. 1934 is right when they start with the gun control. They start it right then. 1938, 4 years later, Federal Firearms Act of 1938 places the first limitations on selling ordinary firearms. Persons selling guns are required to obtain a federal firearms license at an annual cost of $1, which is not much. It was more in 1938, but it was more symbolic than anything. And to maintain records of the name and addresses of persons to whom firearms are sold, gun sales to persons convicted of violent felonies were prohibited. Okay. I think some of the gun control legislation makes sense, like not allowing people convicted of violent felonies to buy guns. They'll get them anyway. Not naive, but maybe don't make it so easy that they can just go to Guns R Us and get themselves a gun. 1968, the Gun Control Act of 1968 is enacted for the purpose of, quote, keeping firearms out of the hands of those not legally entitled to possess them because of age, criminal background, or incompetence. The act regulates imported guns, expands the gun dealer licensing and record-keeping requirements, and places specific limitations on the sale of handguns. Okay, so this list of people that are banned from buying guns is expanded to include people convicted of any non-business-related felony, persons found to be mentally incompetent, and users of illegal drugs. Once again, mentally incompetent people and drug addicts and criminals are going to get guns if they want guns. When you've got a couple hundred million guns out there, they're going to get guns. You know, it's not going to be that difficult. You could put up these barriers, and maybe you should, but you also shouldn't act too surprised. 1972, the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, ATF, is created, listing as part of its mission the control of illegal use and sale of firearms and the enforcement of federal firearms laws. The ATF issues firearms licenses and conducts firearms license qualifications and compliance inspections. Okay, look, there's nothing inherently wrong with having somebody that kind of enforces some of the gun laws, the laws that are, you know, we're not selling to minors, we're not selling to maniacs, we're not selling to convicted felons. Somebody's got to be in charge of that. I don't like government regulation, you might have noticed, but I acknowledge that, you know, there's a time and place for some of this. We are talking about guns, which are potentially dangerous. So it's not as though it should be a free for all, but at the same time, we have to be measured in our, in the sorts of restrictions and the sorts of oversight. Cause some of the oversight is, you know, is crazy. It's unnecessary, but, you know, all right. So 1986, the Armed Career Criminals Act increases penalties for possession of firearms by persons not qualified to own them under the Gun Control Act of 1986. It relaxes some restrictions on guns and ammunition sales and establishes mandatory penalties for the use of firearms during the commission of a crime. Law Enforcement Officer Protection Act bans possession of cop killer bullets capable of penetrating bulletproof clothing. It's interesting. The Law Enforcement Officers Protection Act bans possession of cop killer bullets. Didn't I just read off a gigantic list of all of the agencies that are buying hollow point bullets? How come it's legal for them but illegal for us? I mean, I don't need hollow point bullets, but I'm just saying. In order for this to be fair, shouldn't we be allowed to have them too? I mean, if the fucking Social Security Administration is allowed to have hollow point bullets, we should have them too. Can't trust those people at Social Security, I'm telling you right now. 1988, Reagan signs the Undetectable Firearms Act of 88, making it illegal to manufacture, import, sell, ship, deliver, possess, transfer, or receive any firearm that is not detectable by walking through metal detectors. Interesting, huh? 1989. California bans the possession of semi-automatic assault weapons following the massacre of five children on a Stockton, California school playground. I think that might have been when the government realized, with these shootings, with these mass shootings, they're a real opportunity for us to push through gun control. Like that 1989 shooting might have been an organic one. I don't know. I don't know the details of it. It might not be, but let's just say it was an organic, and by organic, I mean it wasn't a false flag. Then you hear the desire by, you know, the public to say, oh, we got to do something about the old problem reaction solution. We've got to do something about these guns, you know, and then all of a sudden then you start to have the Crime Control Act of 1990 bans the manufacturing and importing semi-automatic assault weapons in the United States. Gun-free school zones are established, carrying specific penalties for violations. I get it. I understand what they're trying to do with gun-free school zones. I do understand the thought behind it. But are we really thinking that some criminal's going to be like, oh, shit, man, I was totally going to go jack this guy, but I'm in a gun-free school zone, so I probably should take my criminal activities to another location. I mean, this is preposterous. It's dumb. None of this stuff is going to – this is just a way for politicians to say, I'm tough on crime. See, I introduced legislation for the gun-free school zones that we established this. We carried specific penalties for violations. Look how great I am. I care about kids. 1994, the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act imposes a five-day waiting period on the purchase of a handgun and requires that local law enforcement agencies conduct background checks on purchases of handguns. Okay, so this, it's kind of like a subset. There's two things. There's the Brady Handgun Violence Protection Act, and then there's the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act. Both of these in 1994. And this, the second one prohibits the sale, manufacture, importation, or possession of several specific types of assault weapons for a 10-year period. However, that law expired in 2004, 10 years later, and Congress didn't reauthorize it. But we've got, you know, they've been working on these laws for a long, long time. We've got in 1998, permanent provisions of the Brady Act go into effect. Gun dealers are now required to initiate a pre-sale criminal background check of all gun buyers through the newly created National Instant Criminal Background Check Computer System, NICS. So, look, they're saying, before we sell you a gun, we have to do a background check on you. Before we sell you a handgun, you have to wait 5 days. The handgun and the 5 days thing, I can totally understand because you can just see somebody getting so like, I'm going to go kill that motherfucker, you know, and then they're out and then I'm going to go get me a gun and I'm going to go shoot somebody. I can maybe understand that. I don't, once again, I don't love the government control. I can see I can understand their logic. And much like I mentioned that Stockton shooting may have given them the idea that, hey, these mass shootings, they present a prime opportunity for us to enact legislation to remove guns, or at least some types of guns, or put additional restrictions on the possession or the acquisition of guns. Then you get to April 20th, 1999, Columbine High School, where Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold shoot and kill 12 students and a teacher, wound 24 other people before killing themselves. Now this renews the debate on the need for more restrictive gun control laws. And, I think I see this all the time. I drive by Columbine every day. You know, I'm not too far from there. But it that happened on April 20th, 1999. On May 20th, 1999, by a 51-50 vote, the U.S. Senate passed a bill requiring trigger locks on all newly manufactured handguns and extending waiting periods and background check requirements to sales of firearms at gun shows. See how this works? To be clear, the Columbine High School situation was an organic shooting. It was not a false flag. But in the wake of that, you get the green light to pass whatever sort of legislation you want, really, because it's the problem reaction solution. Even though in this particular case, you didn't create the problem. When you're manufacturing these false flags, you create the problem to get the reaction you want to offer, you know, to kick in the solution. With regard to something like Columbine, they provided the problem for you. And then the reaction was, as you would expect, this can never happen again. What sort of, you know, steps can we take to make sure? And then here's the solution. So we move on then to January of 2008. President Bush signs National Instant Criminal Background Check Improvement Act, requiring gun buyer background checks to screen for legally declared mentally ill individuals who are ineligible to buy firearms. Now, this is a slippery slope, because legally declared mentally ill individuals, to me, is a gray area, because how you define mental illness is subjective. And if you're talking about legally declaring it, that would lead me to believe that a doctor would be involved. And we understand science is for sale. So it's very easy to get a doctor to diagnose somebody as mentally ill to prevent them from buying a firearm. You could do that with people that are questioning the government. You know, your defiance to the oppositional defiance disorder. They actually came up with that as a psychological condition. It means you don't like the government. It means you don't like authority. They can classify that as a form of mental illness and then make sure that you don't get a gun. Fun, huh? This isn't accidental. This is how you do it. Obama in 2016 calls on Congress to enact a law prohibiting the sale and possession of assault-style weapons and high-capacity ammunition magazines. After a man identified as Omar Mateen kills 49 people in Orlando, Florida gay nightclub using an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. In a call to 911 he made during the attack, Mateen told police he had pledged his allegiance to the radical Islamic terror group ISIS. That's a false flag. If you don't know about the Orlando shooting, look into it, as Eddie Bravo says. That was a false flag. But isn't it funny that the president calls on Congress to immediately enact new laws after one of these shootings? Always happens that way, doesn't it? I mean, it's almost like you could set your watch by it, right? October 4th, 2017. Less than a week after the Las Vegas shooting, U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein introduces Automatic Gunfire Prevention Act that would ban the sale and possession of bump stocks and other devices that allow a semi-automatic weapon to fire like a fully automatic weapon. The bill states, it shall be unlawful for any person to import, sell, manufacture, transfer, or possess in or affecting interstate or foreign commerce a trigger crank, a bump fire device, or any part, combination of parts, component, device, attachment, or accessory that is designed or functions to accelerate the rate of fire of a semi-automatic rifle, but not convert the semi-automatic rifle into a machine gun. Totalitarian tiptoe. They don't know if they don't go from A to Z. They go from A to B, and B to C, and C to D. So this is what I'm talking about. Extended magazines, bump stocks. You know what's coming next. Less than a week after the Las Vegas shooting, Dianne Feinstein introduces Automatic Gunfire Prevention Act. How long do you think it takes to write a bill? Do you think it takes more than a week? What do you think the chances are that dual citizen Dianne Feinstein had this bill written in advance? The next day, October 5th, Senator Feinstein introduces the Background Check Completion Act. She says the bill will close the loophole in the Brady Handgun Violence Protection Act. This is what Feinstein said. Current law allows gun sales to proceed after 72 hours, even if background checks aren't approved. This is a dangerous loophole that could allow criminals and those with mental illness to complete their purchase of firearms, even though it would be unlawful for them to possess them. The Background Check Completion Act would require that a background check be fully completed before any gun buyer who purchases a gun from a federally licensed firearms dealer can take possession of the gun. Once again, what a coincidence that just days after the Las Vegas shooting, Dianne Feinstein has all of this legislation just waiting to go. I mean, you would think that people would recognize the patterns. Every time there's a school shooting or a mass shooting, immediately legislation is just sitting there to take away your gun rights. I mean, it happens all the time. For instance, February 21st, 2018, just days after the February 14th, 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, President Donald Trump orders the Justice Department and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to review bump fire stocks, devices that allow a semi-automatic rifle to be fired similarly to a fully automatic weapon. Trump had previously indicated that he might support a new federal regulation banning the sale of such devices. It's so predictable. It's so predictable. Problem, reaction, solution. You can set your watch by it, man. July 31st, 2018, U.S. District Judge Robert Lasnik in Seattle issued a temporary restraining blocking the release of blueprints that could be used to produce untraceable and undetected 3D printable plastic guns. They want you disarmed. This is not about safety. It's not about your safety. They don't give a shit about you. They never have. They never will. They don't want you to have guns because they don't want you to be a threat to them. It's not about hurting yourself. Not even about hurting other people. They don't care about that. This is the United States government is the one that put in the private prison industry that made that come to life. So you know inherently that they don't care if you're taking that gun and shooting each other with it. Better for them, it just fills up the private prison industries that they created and benefit from, that all these senators have stock in, Wack and Hut and CCA and all these major private prison companies that are publicly traded. Keeping guns off the street is not about reducing crime. It's just not. I mean, it might be what some politician says. It might be that they come out and say, well, this is, you know, it'll get me elected if I pretend that I'm tough on crime. But in actuality, taking guns off the streets is more about just taking guns than doing it for some altruistic reason or some sort of, we're gonna save the people. Because if it was really about taking dangerous guns off the street, then please explain to me why the 1033 program exists. Unfamiliar with that? Let me explain it to you. This is the program that recycles military equipment into the police force. It was started in 1997. It has taken billions of dollars worth of weapons and put them straight into the hands of people that, governments, police forces that need it or that say they need it. It might not seem like, you might not really know what does that mean? They're recycling this material. Are you talking about like Hummers and things like that? We're talking about everything. The way it's set up is that a police district or, a police department would request these items. And if their request was approved, the only thing the police force had to pay for was the shipping and handling of these products. Everything else, it was just given to them. It was a program, an act put into place by who else? Bill Clinton, one of the worst people on the planet, and his horrible wife, who, by the way, has a podcast, and I intend to beat the shit out of her in the podcast since I can't beat the shit out of her in real life. I intend to beat her in the podcast, and she was ahead of me on iTunes a couple of weeks ago, and I was irate, I tell you. I won't stand for it. I need you people to share the show. Got to beat Hillary Clinton in the podcast world. For any feds listening, I'm talking about in the podcast world, not in real life. Oh, back to the 1033 program. Just to give you an idea of how major this is, just in the last 15 years alone, and the program has been going on for another 10 years in addition to that, but just in the last 15 years, the military has transferred to the police forces inside the United States 79,288 assault rifles. You know, the assault rifles that they're trying to take out of our hands, that they're trying to enact all this legislation to get rid of, banning bump stocks and banning extended capacity magazines and blah, 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 while simultaneously importing 80,000 of them to the police force. Now I know what you'll say, but the police can be trusted with them, right? No, they can't. They shoot people with them. I don't need to litigate police violence. Okay. It's a thing. It's out there. But look, let's say that you made a weak case, but a case nonetheless, that, well, the criminals have upped their game in terms of the types of weapons they have, so the police force needs to as well. Okay, fine. The criminals have assault rifles, so the police get assault rifles, and it balances it out. Fine. I'll give you that. I don't believe that, and I don't think that that's a real thing, but let's just say that that's the case. Then please explain to me why the police have taken possession of 205 grenade launchers. Grenade launchers. Okay. 11,959 bayonets. You know what a bayonet is? It's the knife that you attach on the end of a rifle so that you can use it to stab and gut somebody so that you don't have to shoot them right away. Why do the police need bayonets? Who's the enemy? Who are they fighting? They received 479 bomb detonator robots. Really? We have that big of a problem with bombs going off here in the U.S.? I understand that these bomb detection robots went off to Iraq and Afghanistan and all these places because that's a war zone. Where I'm a little foggy is, why are they coming back to us? What do we need them for? The police received 422 helicopters. They received $124 million worth of night vision equipment, including night vision sniper scopes. Protecting and serving, right? The boys in blue, out there looking out for us, out there watching our backs with night vision goggles and bayonets and possibly a grenade launcher. When you dress like a soldier and you're armed like a soldier and you're trained like a soldier, you eventually are going to act like a soldier. Is it really any wonder why the American public is so armed? They don't trust their government. They don't trust their police. And given the bullet purchase by the various departments inside the United States government, I think the people have reason to be worried. If you like this show, please share it. Get the message out to your friends and family. Follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. Go to my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Subscribe to my channel on Rockfin. Subscribe on YouTube. Check me out on Iconic. I'm everywhere, planting flags like crazy because they keep getting pulled up from the tech censorship. I appreciate your support. Thank you all so much. I'll talk to you soon.